This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 281-513-7799. Again, 281-513-7799. Or see the calendar listing on kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Welcome to another edition of the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. A pleasure to be with you this June 14th. Where is the year going? It is almost half over. As I say, a pleasure to be with you. We're going to be taking your calls a little bit later in the show, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We're going to do a show today on finance. I've done a few of these shows, and I get lots of emails to do more of them. My feeling is that listeners of Progressive Radio should have equal access to good financial information as those listening to conservative stations. Financials often get featured on those stations, and there's absolutely no reason why liberals and progressives should be put at any kind of disadvantage in financial information. So we're going to do that show today. And again, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to address them. 713-526-5738 is the number here at KPFT 90.1 here in Houston. Website, www.newcapitalshow.com. We're looking for a few more good people. We've got a great staff of 8 or 9 people. One of our staff is moving to Chicago, so we need a replacement on one of our research teams. If you're interested, send me an email. You can do that from the New Capital Show website, newcapitalshow.com. So, research assistant. We're also looking for a videographer, someone who will film our shows. We're going to try to get them also put up on the website. That seems to be something that people like to entertain themselves with, is not just listening to radio talk shows, but watching radio talk shows these days. So we need somebody, if you have any interest in being part of a great effort, a volunteer effort, nobody gets paid. But if you want to join the team of the New Capital Show, got a couple of openings: research assistant, videographer, and we can also always use backup board ops. Laura's filling in for Michael, but you know, she's got duties and stuff. You're doing great. I can't thank you enough. Laura Slavin's been filling in for Michael Dumont, who is recuperating, and as always, best wishes out to Michael. So let's get to a couple of news items, and then we'll get to financial management and talk about tips and ideas and things that you can do to help yourself. This is really the big news as it relates to New Capital Show. June 12th, Congress turns to energy and lobbyists arrive. Since I started doing this show, I've said energy is the main issue that we face. In the wake of 9/11, I said energy is the main issue. Our call upon the resources of the world, our waste of those resources, is bringing us into political conflict with the rest of the world. That's really one of the big facets of the big picture. And rather than sending our troops all over the world to whack people, the quickest way that we can solve our problems is to reduce our consumption of energy resources. And we have the technology to be able to do that. We have had laws and subsidies and politicians in place who have put up every impediment toward that happening, but we're starting to see the logjam break all over the place, in business, in politics, certainly at the grassroots level. And now Congress is taking up an energy bill that's probably going to look very different than the one that Dick Cheney decided he was going to engineer immediately upon entering the office of the vice presidency back in 2001. This thing is not going to be perfect, I can tell you that. It's going to have all kinds of compromises and all kind of stuff in there that's just nonsense. A lot of it's going to have to do with coal. The coal guys are determined to do whatever they can do. What was that horror movie? Jason? The guy with the zillions of lives? This is the coal guys, the monsters who keep coming. They'll come back. You know, they're sitting on coal, and they're going to do something with that coal. If they can't burn it and put it into the air, they're going to try to turn it into what they call liquid fuel, liquid coal fuel, and stick it in your car. Here's the news. Having tried and failed to overhaul the nation's immigration laws last week, Congress begins what some say is an even more divisive project this week. Taming America's thirst for oil. And by the way, it's not just oil. I can't stand some of these articles the way they're written. Edmund Andrews of the New York Times is a pretty good reporter, but you know, energy is not just about oil. Oil fuels our cars. Coal fuels our homes and electricity, and it's very important that everybody understand the difference. We don't use oil to fuel our homes. When you turn on the lights in your house and you turn on appliances, it's not oil that is providing that electricity, by and large. In some minuscule amount, maybe so. But by and large, it's coal, to the tune of 55% to 60% in this country. Now, there are regional differences. Some regions make greater use of coal, and other regions make use of natural gas and hydroelectric power and nuclear power. But the big picture in the country is that 55% to 60% comes from coal, and as we know, there are problems with coal. Oil fuels our cars. We don't drive our cars on coal. Now, we could. We could. And in fact, there are lots of proposals and lots of ideas that we should be going to plug-in cars, where you would plug your car in at night, charge a battery, and then your car would go on that. And in fact, those of you who have seen, and many of you listening in the KPFT audience have seen this movie, Who Killed the Electric Car? You know, there was a car that ran on batteries, and there are no emissions. Nothing comes out of the tailpipe. Runs on batteries. So, increasingly, we're starting to see ideas about changing over how our transportation, our vehicle infrastructure works, to changing it to a plug-in. And therefore, your car would be charged up by whatever the electricity source is at your house. So, technically, if you are purchasing wind power for your home and charging your battery-powered car, you would have basically an emissions-free profile, both in your home and in your transportation. Now, you think this would be obvious to people who are, you know, well-versed in the industry and big-time insiders, but it's not always the case. There was an op-ed by a man named Frank Zarb a few weeks ago in the New York Times. Frank Zarb wrote what I thought was a pretty good piece about, you know, remaking America's energy profile. Frank Zarb was an assistant in the 1970s to Gerald Ford. He's now with a private equity firm. Aren't we all? And Frank Zarb wrote, you read this piece, it's good, he's got all these good ideas, and you get to the end of it, and Frank Zarb says, and one more thing, one of the ways we're going to cure America's addiction to oil is by building more nuclear power plants. Now, if you've been listening to what I'm saying, you would know that that is just a non sequitur. We use oil for cars and nuclear power plants for our houses. So building more nuclear power plants is not going to do anything for our cars. Unless, of course, we get plug-in electric vehicles. Then cars could be charged up by nuclear power plants. But Frank Zarb didn't mean that. Frank Zarb was either confused or he's trying to confuse. And he winds up on the op-ed page of the New York Times. Folks, these are critical issues. Influential people cannot be making op-eds in the New York Times where they say that we can cure our addiction to oil by building nuclear power plants. It's either confused by the writer or it's meant to confuse because, I don't know, his clients are nuclear power plant companies. We've got to be precise. There are lots of gears in motion right now in terms of how the energy profile of this country is going to turn out. 5 years ago when I started the show, nothing. No thinking going on. It's far different now. And it's important that you as a consumer understand how you are powered. I guarantee if everything got shut off right now, you'd be scrambling around. Oh my God, how do we do this? How are we going to heat ourselves? So much of these are critical issues. Anyway, back to this article. With gasoline prices hovering near all-time highs, the Senate on Monday began debating a sprawling energy bill that has already kicked off an epic lobbying war by huge industries, some of them in conflict with one another. Car companies, oil companies, electric utilities, coal producers, and corn farmers, to name a few. And, of course, wind companies and solar companies and others are in that mix as well. Let's go down that list that Edmund Andrews of the New York Times just listed. Car companies. What do they want? God only knows. There's American car companies we're talking about. But probably Japanese and German and other car companies are in there lobbying on this bill as well. What do they want? Ask yourself before I answer. What do the car companies want? And what don't they want? What they don't want, they don't want regulations that say that they have to increase their fuel economy. Even though the fuel economy of American cars has flatlined since the 1970s. We saw it jump up in the 1970s in response to high oil prices and some federal efforts. The minute Ronald Reagan came into office, that pretty much stopped. And we haven't seen any increase in the average fuel economy of the American auto fleet. Think about buying a computer. Think about the computer industry, where every 18 months, according to Moore's Law, the computing power has gone up while the price has gone down. Yeah. Bill Gates often makes, what do you call it? It makes a little story. He says if the car company industry, if the car industry had followed the computer industry, you know, cars would be going 1,000 miles an hour and getting 2,000 miles a gallon. But they haven't. And so the question is, how are we going to fix that? Because there's an awful lot of incentive now with the Democratic-controlled Congress to start to change things. And also with higher oil prices. And so there are two ideas. First, there's going to be legislation by the Congress that says that the average fuel economy has to go up. And this is literally going to be legislation, regulation that applies to the companies. There's a simpler way to do it, too. It's kind of the way I prefer. It's called a gas tax. A higher gas tax. What that will do is cause consumers to make different choices. Who else? Oil companies. What do oil companies want? Man. Oil companies are just, they're a tough nut to crack. They've got all the money in the world. They don't have any kind of problems like the car companies have. They are flush with cash. They could be making investments in alternative energies, plenty of money to do it, and they're not doing it. I don't know what they want to do. They want to protect their franchise. They want to continue to have the subsidy of the U.S. military paid by the federal taxpayer to station our military in all parts of the world that are sensitive and where oil exists. It's an enormous free subsidy to these guys. Electric utilities. This is an interesting story here. Some electric utilities want to continue to be able to burn coal with no regulation to continue to contribute to the carbon dioxide problem that we have that's leading to global warming. Others actually are kind of getting with the plan. They see that we need to solve this problem, and they actually are willing to go along with a carbon cap and trade system, where basically they would have a certain amount of emissions that they would be allowed to make, and if they go over that, they've got to purchase credits. So it's kind of a form of regulation. Next on the list, coal producers. What do they want? They want, of course, no regulation. They want to be able to continue to mine in an unenvironmental way, doing mountaintop removal, huge, massive pit mines in Wyoming, scarring and destroying the landscape, and they want their product to be able to be burned without any regulation whatsoever in their customers' power plants. And now they want something else. They want subsidies to be able to investigate how to, in large scale, convert coal to a fuel that can be burned in automobiles. They want more subsidies. Corn farmers, what do they want? They want more subsidies. Corn is now being used to produce ethanol, which is being billed as an alternative energy. What we know about corn ethanol is that it is not nearly as good a source of ethanol production as sugarcane, for example. Sugarcane produces 7 times the amount of energy per input. And yet we have this enormous corn legacy here in this country. Lord only knows what we're going to get out of this bill. I can tell you, it isn't going to be perfect, and it's not going to be a progressive panacea, but we can hope that it will be better than what we have. Industry groups have raced to sign up influential lawmakers and are nervously calculating how much regulation they might have to accept from the Democratic majority in Congress. John Breaux, a former Democratic senator from Louisiana who is representing Cerberus Capital Management. Remember that name? I've brought up that name recently a few times. The private equity firm that recently took control of the Chrysler Corporation. Think back to a few shows. Who is now the chairman of Cerberus Capital Management, the company that is buying Chrysler? Remember? Jon Snow. The guy who was the Treasury Secretary as of a couple of years ago in the Bush administration is now the chairman of Cerberus Capital and is taking Chrysler private. And John Breaux is their lobbyist, former Democratic senator. It's incredible, the turnstile. These guys leave office and they're right back in there. They're hired for big bucks, spun around, and pushed right back into Congress to talk to the people who were their colleagues just a matter of weeks ago to influence them and lobby them. It's corrupt. What does John Breaux say? He says, this is going to be harder than immigration. This is going to be the mother of all bills. By that I mean any one portion of it is important enough to affect completion of the whole bill. Detroit's automakers are lobbying hard against tough fuel economy standards, but they support increased production of ethanol and other alternative fuels. So you can see how some of the battle lines get crossed. Harry Reid, who is the Senate Majority Leader, said in a speech on Monday, bold steps and big ideas. The Democratic plan is all about harnessing power, the clear, renewable power that exists literally all around us. I hope so, folks. Democrats are emphasizing renewable fuels, as opposed to the Republican focus on increased oil production. And I've talked about this on the show, too. Republicans focus constantly on increased oil production. It's the craziest, craziest thing you can imagine. Why? There's no oil left in this country, folks. There's no oil left in any significant quantity. It's gone. This country was already not blessed with the larger reserves in the world. There were reserves in Texas, as we know, and there are reserves in Alaska, as we know, and there are reserves offshore. Whatever we have left, and by the way, a lot of our oil, most of our oil, was gone by World War II. And we were a net importing country of oil in the 1970s, and will be from here on out. We are not able to fuel ourselves using domestic supplies of oil. I like to explain that we are burning 8 to 9 billion barrels of oil a year. Total proven reserves in this country are 21 to 23 billion. You can get the information from the Energy Information Administration, the EIA, on the Department of Energy website. It's all there. You think I'm full of it? You think I'm pulling numbers out of nowhere? Look at your own Department of Energy's website, Republicans. All you Republicans out there who think that I am just fibbing, that I am just, you know, I'm just against Republicans, and I'm coming up with numbers to justify that. Go ahead. Go to the Department of Energy's Energy Information Administration website and look at proven oil reserves in this country. You'll see 20-something billion barrels of oil. And then look at how much we burn. You'll find that information there, too. You'll see 8 to 9 billion barrels of oil a year and growing. Now do the math. Let's just say there's 24 billion proven barrels in reserve and 8. And you do 24 divided by 8 equals, last I looked, that's 3. 3 years. At current consumption levels, assuming that we're going to fuel ourselves completely, we're not taking any more imports, right? We're going to be energy independent. 3 years. There's the number. I don't know about you. 3 years is not a lot in my book. And as I get older, it goes faster every day. 3 years, the end of it's on you in no time. So that's why we progressives say there's something funny here going on. We know Republicans can do math. In fact, Republicans claim to be the party of being able to do math. So how is it that their plan for this country is more domestic oil production? It's why we progressives look at it and say there's something funny going on here. We know these guys can do math. We know they can take 24 and divide it by 8, and we know they'll get a right answer. You know, they may not be able to do much more, but they can certainly do 24 divided by 8. Why is this their plan? It's no plan. And in fact, it's not a plan. And you don't really have to do much more than look at that math number and look at the Republican support for that math. We're going to base a strategy, an energy strategy, a long-term energy policy for this country. We're going to base on 24 divided by 8 equals 3 years. 3 years is not very long-term. You only have to look at that to understand why progressives think that the Republican Party is chock through with influence peddling by oil companies. That's it in a nutshell. 24 divided by 8. There's not enough oil. And so if we're not going to get more out of domestic reserves, and we're not, folks, talk to your friendly next-door neighbor who works at, I don't know, Shell or BP or any of those places. They know. Don't talk to the upper management because they'll toe the line. Talk to middle managers. Talk to caring people who work in these firms, who know the numbers, who every day deal with the reality. They'll tell you. 24 divided by 8 is not going to work. And so now you know why we're in Iraq. Now you know why we have had huge amounts of military personnel stationed in the Middle East. Not just since George Bush went on television in March of 2003 and said, we've begun the invasion. Long before that. You know, really dating back to his dad, George H.W. Bush, in the first Gulf War, and continued through the Clinton administration with no-fly zones over Iraq and huge naval fleet stationed in the Persian Gulf. I love it when we get pronouncements of our government, you know, talking about, you know, we're not going to tolerate Iranian influence peddling in the Middle East. We're not going to tolerate Syrian influence peddling. But folks, we're a long way from home ourselves, I hate to tell you. You know, there was the old Monroe Doctrine, espoused in the 1820s, but 1821, 1822. This was the U.S. message to Europe, hands off Latin America. You know, and now we're giving more versions of the Monroe Doctrine. Hands off the Middle East. And so, folks, the progressive idea that we have the technology, we have the ability to fuel ourselves with new technologies, we have the ability to develop these technologies using the world's greatest fleet of engineers and entrepreneurs and capital markets, and we have the ability to live our lives in more energy efficient ways and quit wasting the amount of energy that we waste in terms of transporting ourselves in our cars and fueling our appliances and our lights and our homes, we can do this. And so, this viewpoint is coming to dominate. And we are seeing alliances of progressives, of Democratic Party members, of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, of local politicians, of grassroots organizers and citizens. And my friends, we are going to take control of this country. And we're going to fix the problems. I want to do a little talking about money, and then we're going to take your calls. What I've been talking about is not totally foreign to the ideas of financial management and personal financial management. Why is that? Because we've been hearing all sorts of information about the retirement crisis that we're headed for as baby boomers retire and retirement savings are not adequate and Social Security goes bankrupt. One of the key things about the progressive viewpoint is that it is going to help the country solve retirement crises. How? Why? Well, there's a very nice thing that happens when you decide that you don't need to consume as much. First, you save more money. And second, you become accustomed to living a lifestyle early on in your life so that when you grow older and your income is less and you retire, you don't feel like you need to spend as much in retirement. There's a double benefit. Does that make sense? There's a double benefit to living your life in a progressive way. You don't spend as much during your income-earning years, your younger years, when you're earning money, you have a job, you're saving money, you're saving more. Because you're not spending as much on junk. You don't waste as much money on electric bills. You don't build 6,000-7,000 square foot houses that need to be air conditioned to the tune of $500-700 a month. Your appetites are less, and so you're able to save more money. And then you become accustomed to living in that way. And of course, we're creatures of habit. I look at myself all the time and I see that I am just a creature of habit. And I try to create new habits all the time, you know? I try to meditate every morning. Not been so good at it lately. Why? Because I've sort of let my habits slip. You know, it's kind of every other day right now. And I know that unless I create the habit, my behavior is not going to follow. We are creatures of habit. And as we get older, we have to consciously create these habits. And so when you create a habit of living a progressive lifestyle, less consumption, more intelligent use of energy, more caring about the environment, that becomes ingrained in your habit so that when you retire, you are perfectly comfortable continuing to live that cost-effective lifestyle. And so I submit to you that for your own personal financial management, the habits that you set now are going to largely determine how comfortably you are able to live your retirement years. And I submit to you that the political ideas that you hold directly lead to those habits. If you think that we need to consume beyond our means, if you are addicted to the marketing machine that comes at you, convincing you that you need every single thing left and right, if you're trying to keep up with people, keep up with the Joneses, you're going to have a hard time in retirement, I can tell you that. Because that's the way you're going to live. And the income's not going to be there. And a lot of the information that you will hear through what I call investment pornography, you'll see it in the magazines, right? You're in the airport. Some magazine, make more now. Big stock hits. And on other radio stations, some of which broadcast financial information all day long, some of which is pretty good information. I'm going to tell you that. Not going to name any names. But some of it's outright junk, encouraging you to trade, market time, try to pick stocks. My friends, you need to do some very simple things. You need to pick investments that are low cost, don't have high fees, don't have high turnover. And if you feel that there are progressive ideals that you want to uphold, you can make investments in mutual funds that are socially responsible funds. I did a show back on March 13th. You can get it off newcapitalshow.com. We had several firms that are involved in socially responsible investing. Sierra Club. Sierra Club has a mutual fund. Looks all right. I wouldn't put it in a taxable account because it's a high turnover fund, 120%. Maybe it lines up with your ideals, maybe it doesn't. But I'm telling you that there are ways to arrange your finances and live your lifestyle so that you will be comfortable in retirement, and all of this will uphold progressive ideals. We're starting to pile up on the phones now. We're going to take a quick break and get to your call. 713-526-5738. I'm Leo Gold. This is the New Capital Show. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. We're going to take your calls now, talking about energy and personal finance today. There's nothing better than the Beatles, is there? I don't. My daughter, my family. That's about it. First up is Dale. Dale, welcome to the show. You're on. You're on.
Hey, Leo, you rock.
Thank you.
Nothing's better than the Beatles. Hey, listen, you know, what you're saying about the lifestyle change, you know, petroleum is a drug.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, I should say first off, I have driven an electric car for 9 years now. I bought it and have turned my back on petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
It is delicious.
Yeah,
to be free of this monkey.
I hear they're fast too, Dale. I hear the acceleration is quite.
If people could test drive one of these, and I'm telling you this straight, 150-year-old technology, they wouldn't drive anything but that. But they're not available, and you can only get hybrids. And oh, by the way, the car that I'm driving is 27 years old.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dale, there's a lot going on here, and it's really exciting. There's a lot going on in battery technology. There's a company in Waltham, Massachusetts that's doing some great stuff in batteries. There is a lot of stuff going on, and I want to tell people if you're interested in investing in this area, this is something I wanted to get to today. And by the way, anything I say today, I want to make sure you understand, it's not a solicitation for investment. I'm not rendering investment advice. I'm giving you information only. Neither is the station. But there are ways to invest in some of these green and clean technologies that are coming about. There are actually some they're not index funds, but they're what are called ETFs, exchange traded funds. PowerShares is a family of exchange-traded funds. There's something called the Wilder Hill Clean Energy Fund, the Wilder Hill Progressive Energy Fund. They have a clean technology fund. Winslow Company out of Boston has a green growth fund. There are lots of these things coming about. Now, where you want to put that in your portfolio, these are going to be higher risk investments, right? Because some of these companies are going to go big and some are not. Because either the technology is not going to work out or it's not going to be adopted en masse or there's going to be government regulation that hurts it. But there are ways for you to gain some exposure. My advice would be to have some limited amount if you're interested in this, because I believe that the future is in these technologies, Dale.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're ahead of the curve.
Everything in your home is electric.
Yeah.
Try to find one thing that runs off of coal or petroleum besides your car.
Yeah, no. The only thing that runs on petroleum generally is your car, and though there's heating oil.
Well, down here
we don't use heating oil.
But if we could break that, there's a wonderful new technology coming out of, I don't know how long I've got here, but there's a wonderful new wind power technology that's coming out of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It's not coming out of the United States, it's coming out of Germany.
Right, the Germans and the Danes are very advanced in their turbines.
Right, and these are different turbines. They don't look like an airplane sitting on a swivel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're actually, they look rather like this piece of tinfoil, kind of mm-hmm. twisted.
Yeah, there's...
And they're designed to catch the wind from every
angle. Yeah.
And they usually have a 20-year warranty.
Mm-hmm. Dale, thanks for the call.
Hey, have a great day.
I saw a business proposal, I don't know, maybe a couple years ago, for a wind turbine that a guy was working on this out of the woodlands. Out of the woodlands. This guy had created this really interesting-looking wind turbine that he claimed was more efficient and so forth. I don't know where it's gone. I have no idea. I know that there's a lot going on in wind energy. T. Boone Pickens, the famous oil man, corporate raider back in the 80s, and who now is a hedge fund manager, an energy hedge fund manager, made $1 billion, I think, last year, and also has purchased water rights here in Texas, which is a very messed up arrangement that we have in taking of water rights here. But leaving that aside, Boone Pickens has announced a major initiative to build what would be the nation's largest wind farm near Abilene. Already the nation's largest wind farm is near there. Next up is Karen. Karen, welcome to New Capital Show.
Hi, Leo. I love your show.
Thank you.
I was interested in what you said just fleetingly at the beginning of the show about aren't we all in private equity. I need some information for somebody like myself, my husband, who are going to retire soon.
Uh-huh.
I buy the whole thing you said about simplicity of lifestyle and have tried to follow that myself a bit. But in advising parents maybe a decade ago,
yeah,
I thought I knew what was going on for retirement people, but it appears that as I've been busy in the last decade, things have changed completely in Wall Street, perhaps because of the large capital interests trying to get around Sarbanes-Oxley and all the various things that were put in place vis-a-vis individual corporations. And I keep reading about private equity and hedge funds, and I feel I don't know what in God's name they're doing.
Okay, my advice on this is that unless you are extraordinarily rich, I mean, you have millions upon millions, when I say millions, I mean several million dollars, that my advice would be that these funds are not the right solution for people. The fees are very, very high, and they tend to be not very tax efficient. And so what I would say, Karen, is that you're thinking that things have changed. I would not think that. I would encourage you to think that things have not changed. Stocks have returned the highest return of any asset class, more than bonds, more than cash. Real estate has had good returns also, and it's done so over many, many decades, and I would expect that to continue to be the case. So I encourage people to keep it simple, use low-cost and low-turnover funds that are well-diversified, and I would frankly recommend use of index funds based on solid indexes, Karen. So
I guess the question I had really is, I'm scared because I feel that money we've had in pension funds and in more general funds are being subject to private equity and hedge fund manipulation without our even knowing
it,
because the pension fund people are backing these firms.
You're exactly right about that. The pension funds and the endowments are not taxed. They don't pay taxes. And so they have a little more incentive to put money with these groups because they're not going to be subject to the large tax effects that would otherwise accrue to them. But if you think about it this way, let's say that you, as an individual investor, put money into a private equity fund or a hedge fund, and they tend to have high turnover. Automatically off the bat, you're going to part with 20%, you're going to part with 2% annually in a management fee. Then you're going to part with 20% of the profits in what's called the carry, because what they do is they take 20% of the profit. So you've just parted with 22% of the profit that you're going to get. Now let's assume that you're going to be taxed on any of the gains on a short-term rate. At least in the case of hedge funds, that's often the case, because they tend to churn their portfolios. What that means is they buy and sell a lot. They're not like Warren Buffett, where they buy something and they hold it for life.
Right.
If you do that, then you have a better tax situation, because if you ever do sell it, you're taxed at 15%, which is the long-term capital gains tax rate. If you sell something on a short-term basis, then you're going to be taxed at an income tax rate, which for most people is going to be higher than 15%. Not in all cases, but in many cases, it is. And so let's just say you're going to part with 25% to the government. So you have already parted with half of your profit before you've even blinked, and that is the problem.
My main question is this.
Mm-hmm.
When you retire, if you allow things to just, kind of ride in the same portfolio that you've had, that it's been okay and it's been accumulating in pension funds that you've, put in over the years, should you begin to get out of some of those funds because they, in turn, are risking your money by allowing the private equity people and the hedge fund people to use that
Karen, the portfolio
money
that you hold needs to relate to the goals that you have personally, which includes retirement and education and other goals. It relates to the life that you want to lead and what your hopes are to lead that kind of life while you have the time that you're given here on the earth. And it also bears some resemblance to portfolio prudent portfolio theory, which advocates diversification, and I would add to that low-cost, low-turnover funds that are based upon good indexes. So if you have an amount of money that needs to be managed, get yourself an advisor and let them help you if you don't know what you're doing. Okay, thanks for the call, Karen.
Could you answer one last question?
Real quick.
Just in general for all of us out here.
Yeah.
I read in the Wall Street Journal yesterday two different articles.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is this one called Breaking Views, and it is written by a guy named Hugh Dixon.
Yep.
And it says, greed keeps fear in check, okay? Managers of hedge funds and private equity firms, the two dominant species in the modern financial jungle, typically collect 20% of the profits when things go well, but they don't share in the losses when things go badly.
That's right. There it is, Karen.
How come they don't share in the losses?
Because that's the contractual arrangement that they have. When the funds make money, they take their profit. When the funds lose money, they don't pay to bring you back.
And the second article I read is about all the big business schools in this country and their MBA programs.
Mm-hmm.
They're instituting huge, big new programs in private equity, and they want all these young, hot guys to get into private equity. So where do we all stand as a country if this is the way it's going?
Don't know. Thanks, Karen.
Talk about it.
Okay. My friends, what's happening in private equity, in my opinion, is the result of lax management of our corporations by the large mutual fund houses and by the boards of directors that are appointed and voted to manage these companies. And you and I are partially to blame. We need to be communicating to the mutual funds that we hold that it's important to us that they make sure that the companies are managed properly, that executive compensation is appropriate, that community relations, environmental responsibility, social responsibility, labor relations, that all of these things are important to you. When you communicate that to the funds that you hold and the managers who work for you, that will begin to trickle up. Until that happens, there are going to be private entities that purchase companies and put these things into place. And that's what's going on, very simply. We have some problems in the way our public companies are structured. It's not all bad. There's a lot that's good. But this is another reason why you want to take a look at investing money in funds where there are active fund managers who really try to influence the companies. So that's my evaluation. Karen, thanks for the call. Let's see. Next up is going to be Isaac. Isaac, welcome to New Capital Show.
Yes, sir. Thank you. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, I heard your show. I mean, beautiful, beautiful, highly beautiful. And one thing you haven't mentioned about, well, I'm for really, really wind energy and solar power, which is... Solar energy can do a whole lot, and also wind power. I mean, is there any kind of places or whatever to invest on? I mean, or if it is not, or if it is, what's wrong with it?
To invest, you're asking me?
I mean, why people do not promote solar energy and wind power?
Well, it's starting, Isaac. As I've been saying in this show, it's changing, and the solar business is growing rapidly, and the wind business are both growing rapidly. They're both growing in very rapid double digits. Both are growing 20% plus a year. The wind business and the solar business. These are growth industries, and they're going to continue to grow rapidly in the years ahead. So what you want is going to happen, okay, Isaac?
Well, I hope it does, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Yes, sir.
This is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. We're taking your calls today and talking about energy policy and also personal finance and how these things intersect. Let's take Karen's call next. Karen. Oh, we already took Karen. Let's take Ronald. Ronald.
Oh, yes. Good morning. I consider myself a pretty progressive thinker.
Yeah.
And to me, I think there's a rather obvious solution long-term for all of these energy problems, and I don't understand why I don't hear much about it.
What is it?
Now, basically, when you got all these coal things, if you have an unlimited supply of electricity, you can make hydrogen, electric cars, and all that stuff work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, how does coal plants make electricity? With steam.
Right.
Okay? Where is there a big source of steam in this country? Well, Yellowstone National Park has a free source of steam.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't these big companies just drill some holes and pull some energy out
of the ground? You're talking about geothermal energy.
Yes.
Yeah, geothermal is one of the alternative methods of producing energy that
well,
I think
is... Well, why isn't Exxon Oil getting to work on this, or whoever used to drill oil wells?
Ronald, I can't speak for Exxon. All I can tell you is what they say. And Exxon...
Well, there used to be hundreds of people drilling, 400 people a month drilling oil wells in Texas. Why can't they just dig a little deeper?
Yeah. Well, remember something, Ronald. Exxon is an oil company. An oil company is...
Oil has a vested interest in oil, of course.
Yeah, but it's a transportation fuel.
So we need new companies.
Yeah, we're getting them, Ronald.
Yes.
It's happening, I promise you. I don't know.
New companies.
It's happening.
Geopower.
You're right on. We need new companies, and we need good people in those companies. Thanks for the call, Ronald.
Okay.
Folks, we are getting new companies. It is happening. A lot of it's happening in California. I wish more was happening in Texas. I expect that if it's happening in Texas, it's happening more in Austin than it is in Houston. And I always try to encourage listeners who are in energy companies here in Houston to think long term. I hope that you will be thinking long term. I hope you will be thinking about taking some of the cash flows that you have right now and devoting them to projects. It does happen. Shell has a solar group. British Petroleum has a solar group. But the investments that they're making are a minuscule amount of what is continuing to go into fossil fuels. And until, frankly, legislation changes to either take away subsidies from the petroleum and the fossil fuel sector, which I would hope would happen, or additional subsidies are added to their competitors, alternative energy, then they're not going to have an incentive to do that. So that's why your vote, who you vote for, and the government policies that result from your vote are so critical to the energy sector. That's it. That's all I can tell you, folks. Get out and vote. You must vote. You must encourage others to vote. Your vote counts. It may not count as much as you want it to, but it doesn't count for as little as other people may try to convince you. Okay, next up is Lee. Lee, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that anything that is food should not be made into fuel, except for human beings. I mean, for their bodies. I mean, like, anything that uses water. You don't, you cannot use your sugar cane. That's no good.
Yeah.
You can't do that. The other thing is, you've got to leave all of that CO2 in the ground. I know we're not going to do it, but, you know, you think of every time you bring up the oil, you're bringing up CO2. And you got to leave that stuff in the ground. And I'm really very interested in the guy in the Woodland small fan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think I have any information. It was a couple years ago. I saw a business plan, and frankly, Lee, I don't think I kept it. But I can tell you, if you will just find all kind of stuff on the internet going on wind turbines and wind turbine design. So,
and I know in I think it's in Hong Kong that they have small wind turbines that you can put on your buildings,
and
anything again, anything that is this mass of wind or even solar. Somebody was saying you could put all this stuff in Arizona and you could have electricity for the whole United States. Not without putting wires up there, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bad. You lose your electricity and it also destroys the environment.
Lee, thanks for your call.
Bye.
You know, Lee's pointing some very important things up, and that is that there are enormous, enormous losses in transmission of electricity when it has to go long distances. And this argues for the distributed form of generating energy, right? You put the solar panels on your house so that you don't have as much loss. If you put them out in Arizona and try to ship the electricity to Texas, you're going to have transmission losses. By the way, one of the most unenvironmental things about coal is the enormous amount of loss that takes place in the combustion process, just in the combustion process. And so we always have to think about the amount of loss that takes place in the generation of energy. It's probably greater than the amount of energy that we produce itself. Lee makes some great points. And also her point about we should not use food sources for producing energy. You know, you're going to get some debate there, but I think it's a point that's well taken. And also, anytime you till up a field, you're going to produce CO2. So all sorts of issues about that. Next up is Ahmed. Ahmed, welcome to New Capital Show.
Thank you. You know, the, you always, you know, the people, lefties and the peacenecks, they always put the blame on the oil companies. As a petroleum consultant, rest assured, there are people a lot more beneficiaries of oil crises, such as going to Iraq, what have you, than the oil companies themselves. You know, and the major ones, especially, are IMF, the World Bank, and possibly, you know, individuals like Dick Cheney and thousands of others. They make the biggest profit for their investment. They're huge. I mean, 1,000% probably of their investment. The problem is really comes down to is the American. They all are drug addicts, whereby oil is a drug and the Americans are the junkies.
You know, Ahmed, it's funny that you say Americans are drug addicts, because I saw on Charlie Rose the other night Joseph Califano, who was he was an advisor to President Johnson back in the 1960s, and he was secretary of something or other, maybe under Carter, I think. Joseph Califano has written a book about addiction in America. Apparently, Americans consume 2/3 of all illegal drugs in the world. Now, I understand that there are issues about what we consider to be illegal drugs and not illegal drugs, but Americans also consume a vast disproportionate amount of legal pharmaceuticals. Now, setting aside the fact that there's also good news, that people have medicine available to them, and there are parts of the world where there isn't medicine. Califano's point is that even when you adjust for these things, Americans ingest way too much substance, and there is an addiction problem in the country. And his book is very interesting because he's trying to get a handle on what is it about the American culture that leads to addiction. And of course, you'll hear here on KPFT all the time, and I would echo that the amount of money that we're spending on the war on drugs to interdict drugs is crazy money. We've spent $600 billion to $1 trillion or so. And so I agree with you that oil is another form of addiction that we have, where we take materials and we convert them for our own comfortable use, and there are downsides to it that we don't see. So that's what I would say. Ahmed, thank you for the call.
Wait a second.
Nope, we're out of time. I'm sorry, my friend.
I see. All right.
Yep, the show's gone quick today, folks, and I'm sorry, we're out of time today. Dave, Cindy, Herman, and Jeffrey, I'm sorry we weren't able to get to your calls, but if you go to newcapitalshow.com, we will post a journal for today's show, and any of you listening out there are more than welcome to come to the forum there and post your thoughts on today's show. Alternatively, you'll try to reach us next week. I'm sorry, we've run out of time. There's a lot more that we can add, and I feel that maybe we'll repeat some of what we were trying to do with today's show in talking about personal finance and energy policy. There's a lot going on, friends. There's a lot to be very, very hopeful about, and you play a major role in the future. What you think and what you do and how you vote are critical to the future. Don't let anybody tell you that it's not. My thanks to Laura Slavin again for working the board. Laura, thank you so much. As always, you're doing a great job filling in for Michael.
My pleasure.
And I hope all of you have a great week and a great weekend. This has been another edition of the New Capital Show, www.newcapitalshow.com and kpft.org. Take care.
Listen up, Houston. Now is the time to showcase your pride. We need your help to design, build, and decorate our entry in the 29th annual Pride Festival and Parade, Saturday, June 23rd. There's no time to lose, and we welcome everybody. For more information, contact KPFT's volunteer coordinator at 713-526-4000, extension 316, or email volunteer@kpft.org. Support the movement, support your station, but most of all, support your community. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Activists Mike Farrell and Death Row Exoneary, Greg Wilvoit will be speaking at an event benefiting the Gulf Region Advocacy Center. The event will take place on June 29th at 6 p.m. at Christ Church Cathedral in downtown. Greg Wilvoit will speak about his wrongful conviction and the 5 years he spent on death row as an innocent man. Mike Farrell, the actor, writer, director, and activist who gained fame on the TV show MASH, will speak about issues surrounding the death penalty and sign copies of his memoir. Dinner and drinks will be served. Student tickets are available. For more information and to buy tickets, go to
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.